Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School, so listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Today, my guest is Sue Hayes, who in 2022 became the first woman chief executive of Nottingham Building Society in its 174-year history. Sue started her career as a trainee legal executive, but she very quickly moved on to senior leadership roles at Barclays, Santander, Aldermore Bank and GB Bank, among many others. She has spent the first 3 years of her leadership at Nottingham Building Society focusing on team building, digital innovation and strategy. So Sue Hayes, welcome to this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Mike.
So what does the Chief Executive Officer of a building society do?
Well, that's always a good question. I think, as you've mentioned, I've been here for 3 years, so it's been slightly different in each year. And that's one of the things that I learned as you go up the ranks is that you kind of have to take a slightly longer term view of things. So year one was essentially about setting some foundations. It was about starting to recruit the team and it was about building a strategy. But it's also about relationship building with the board and with regulators. So year two then was a bit about execution in terms of some of the things, the systems and that sort of thing, because they were quite old fashioned. And then year three is hopefully where it gets really exciting, which is where we really start to move forward on the digital agenda. And also in terms of some of the partnerships that we've created with some of these fintechs in order to try and help customer experience and really move the business forward. But the final thing I would say about year three is we've changed the brand as well. So hopefully you asked me about that.
Oh, we were very good. Yeah, okay. We'll definitely ask you that. And about the fintechs as well. But I read something where you were advising young would-be leaders not to have too many priorities, to concentrate on the things that they believe matter. So what matters to you most as a CEO?
So the advice I give to most people is you need one big good thing a year on your CV to really build a story. And lots of people think to have 10 objectives in a year is going to be a really great thing. And to be fair, it's not just young would-be leaders. It's everybody in an organisation. Because if you can build one thing and do it really well and really make it noteworthy, that's so much stronger than lots of things. So, yeah, one big thing a year would be my top tip.
Okay, so what's your big thing this year?
So the big thing this year, actually we've got two, but I'll go with the primary one.
Wait a minute, I'm sure somebody told me, go on.
which is that we are going live with a new technology system which will allow us to do mortgages for extraordinary borrowers, so difficult to place mortgages within 3 days, which is about 15 days faster than we currently do them. And that goes live in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, right. So that is your, as a business, that's one of your big things, isn't it? That you are providing mortgages for people who traditionally would have struggled to fill the forms in. I guess freelancers, members of the gig economy, foreign nationals. That's a very specific strategy. How did that come about?
So I believe in building strategy from data and from research. And what we knew is that the world of work is changing quite considerably. And so you've got more 0-hour contracts, as you say, you've got gig economy. And so we started to research how many of these types of people are there. And it's really difficult for them to get mortgages because they don't have the same wage every single month. And that's what the normal system's like. And so we were trying to find a niche of segments that was a growing segment, but also would be difficult for other people to actually meet the needs of. So we then talked to lots of customers, did lots of research. And so you're talking about people with three jobs, side hustles, that was a regular phrase that comes through, and just people's frustration with the fact that they've also got to buy with family or friends in order to have a fighting chance to get a home. And we found this was a big growing population of people who actually were really low risk because they're so passionate, they'll just keep adding jobs until they get to the level that they need to in terms of income.
So how are you able to do this? Is it just a change of mindset? Because you, right at the beginning of your answer there, you said it's a group of people who traditionally building societies would have struggled to deal with. So what sets Nottingham apart? How can you deal with them now?
Yeah, so it's less about building societies being able to deal with them, but it's the big banks. So the big banks have automated machines that basically say, if you've got a regular income, you know, this is the amount of lending you can have. So we actually recruited from both challenger banks who are used to this sort of more specialist lending and building societies. And we created the purpose for the organisation, which was to help the extraordinary to own their own home. And one of the things I did was deliberately put the word fight. So we fight to help the extraordinary to own their own home, to demonstrate that we needed to be an edgier building society than, but rather than just being cute and cuddly, but that we were actually going to have some real edge to make sure that we could cut through the market.
So cute and cuddly. Cute and cuddly has been developed over a period of 174 years. So how difficult is it for you to innovate? Because that is your reputation, innovator, modernizer. How difficult is that in a 174-year-old organization?
Well, culture is always difficult. And what you want to do is keep the cute and cuddly, but you need to add some edge to it in terms of execution of new approaches. So what you end up doing is having to have a mix of the old and the new in terms of people and trying to keep the best of the positives of the society. I was also really lucky when I came in because there were a lot of great foundations. So we had a lot of capital, we had a lot of commitment, and we had 300,000 members who really liked us. So those are the types of strengths that you want to keep and not lose. And then it's trying to transition both the colleagues and the members in terms of the journey that you're taking them on.
Yeah, I've got you. I can't resist throwing in a quote that I read that you had said online. You were trying to combine that traditional mutual ethos that you talked about with an Amazon style approach to customer service. What is that?
Well, the thing I think we all like about Amazon, and we all hate about them actually, but we hate them because we need them and we love what they actually give us, but we hate the fact that they are such a conglomerate and they don't always do great things for their colleagues. So it is about trying to have that passion for the customer experience and for really transforming it. So getting hold of the best of that and then also translating it through a purposeful mutual approach to it.
Can you do both, or does one not necessarily pull against the other?
You'll be able to tell me in about 2 years.
I'll invite you back on. Yeah.
I don't think that it's difficult to do them both. I think the challenge is you need to have people who are passionate to create a great customer experience.
So, elephant in the room, you've already mentioned it once, but we'll go for it again. A couple of months ago, I turned on BBC National Radio 4. After 10 minutes, doom, gloom, despair, as is always the case. And finally, item, the happy bit at the end was but Nottingham Building Society has dropped Robin Hood from its branding. What did you think?
So, 5 years ago, so before I joined the society, there was some research done to try and see how the society could attract a younger audience. And unfortunately, the Nottingham and the Robin Hood image didn't research very well. So at that point, we were creating a new app. And that new app, they ended up calling it Beehive to make it more attractive to younger people. So when we started doing the research for the strategy, we looked at how well known was the Nottingham brand and what did people like and not like about it. What we found was that less than 1% of people even knew, and that included in the centre of Nottingham. So we had a recognition problem. But then on top of that, Robin Hood was quite polarising and Beehive wasn't recognised at all. So we had two brands, neither of which were really out there. So when we did the latest piece of research, what we knew we wanted to demonstrate was that we were a modern brand. And so it wasn't whether we had Robin Hood or whether we didn't. It was more around how could we demonstrate that modern brand. And we're delighted that Robin Hood is still a very big figure in the Nottingham itself. But the thing that really researched and was important to people was the fact we were building society. So that's what we're actually playing up. So instead of being called the Nottingham now, it's actually Nottingham Building Society. And that's all done because that's what we believe the current and future customers actually and members want of us.
So do you think Robin Hood might come back at some point?
He's still in the city.
Yeah, yeah. And so it caused a kerfuffle in local media. And as I say, I was a bit gobsmacked to hear it on National Radio 4. How do you deal with something like that? Do you just come up with the arguments, work your way through it, or is it something that you feel you have to return to?
No, it's interesting. It's a really massively disproportionate impact of what people see in the papers. And online, because what they've done is picked up the woke aspect where we were talking about financial diversity. So, and financial diversity is actually about helping those people who wouldn't normally be able to own their own home. So it's just the way in which certain things get picked up. Now, the positive out of this is, despite this or because of this, it means that we've had 660 million potential views of the brand. And I actually, I often go into and stay in the centre of Nottingham. And there were three people that I chat to that are completely random. And 6 months ago, they didn't know who Nottingham Building Society were. And they asked me where I worked. And I told them, and they still couldn't really recall it. And actually, I saw them again a couple of weeks ago, and they said, "Oh my goodness, you've taken away Robin Hood." So I said, "Well, at least it's landed with you about who we are anyway."
It's interesting because you are passionate about researching customer behaviour in that way, isn't it? That's what you do. And you're also a fan of nudge theory. Has all that data, research, customer behaviour, helped to you in your leadership?
Yeah, so I think it's incredibly important that you kind of understand how people might behave. And so when we did the research and we said we were going to not have Robin Hood as part of the brand logo, we knew that it was going to be polarizing, but particularly obviously in Nottingham itself. But there were a lot of people who also said, actually, you know, it's the city, it's not the building society. And also, you know, oh, there's some other apps and some other types of betting companies and things that have all got that on. So you had to work out whether you wanted to be associated with something like that or not. So hopefully by the end of this, everyone will be happy. But there are lots of people who do really like the brand. It's just they're not quite as noisy as the papers. One of the things I found fascinating in my career is people often assume that people will act like them. And when you work in a bank, you're really interested in finance. Most other people aren't. They just want to make sure they've got enough money and they're worried about their future. And so the point around nudge theory for me is about how you help people to act about their long-term financial security.
We better explain nudge theory being the way in which you put an argument influences the outcome.
Yeah, so the examples I often use is, and I'm sure you know this, is that it's actually a government department that started this under Cameron. And so I've used some of the organisations that actually worked for the government. And the things that I thought were fascinating about how to get people to stop smoking, how to get people to eat healthily, all those things have used nudge theory on behalf of the government.
And has it been successful for you in your career, do you think?
Absolutely, because there's not too many people that think about it. And even down to when I worked at Barclays, we looked at how people queued and how they thought about it when they actually walked into a branch, about where do they go, depending on what their needs were. So actually understanding how people were thinking, getting them to talk you through it, and then saying, well, you know, if we put it here or if we put something there, what are people likely to do? Or how are they likely to behave? I find that utterly fascinating.
And do you kit out your buildings to reflect that?
I absolutely do. And actually, one of the things that I'm smiling about here is that my first couple of weeks in the organisation, there was an executive floor. And like many organisations, I just said, look, it's not really appropriate to have an executive floor. And the CEO had the biggest office and the CFO had the next biggest office. And so I said, look, let's do some demonstrations of how we're going to change to be a more modern mutual for everybody internally so they start to see it.
This is here in Nottingham?
Here in Nottingham, yeah. And the thing that seems to have resonated most and is still talked about 2 years later is that I removed the doors between the departments and the executive suite. It was a how dare you, actually. And actually, some of the PAs were very annoyed about this because that then meant they were part of the open plan. But it still resonates with people. It's a non-hierarchical organisation. Anyone can talk to anyone. Anyone should talk to anyone. And that, for me, is part of the whole ethos of this should be a great place to work. And as I say, that sort of nudge of taking the doors off has definitely resonated.
Did you have an executive toilet as well or anything of that nature?
Oh, yes, of course.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show.
So let me go right back to the beginning. So you've been in financial services for about a quarter of a century. Was that always your intention?
So as you can probably tell by the first job, the trainee legal executive, exactly. It was not quite my intention. But so when I left school and I wasn't able to go to university at that particular point. And so we used to have these things called career advisors. My career advisor had three options for me. One was the trainee legal executive. A second one was a panel beater for cars. And the third one was a pheasant farmer. My response was, I'd better go for the trainee legal executive then. But through coincidence, I ended up getting into financial services and ultimately then...
Happenstance.
Yes, as lots of things are. Life's a lot about luck. And I just found I met some really interesting people. I was really lucky. I was offered some really interesting jobs. They kept changing every 2 to 3 years. And then I just decided that it's actually a really important thing to try and help people to have a good experience with banks and building societies. And so I got passionate about it. And luckily, as you started off with what's a CEO's job, luckily I can turn my hand and an interest to a huge range of everything from finance to regulation to customer experience to marketing. And I like the fact that it covers every aspect. And I get to speak to you, Mike.
Great stuff. So aside from the pheasants and the panel beating, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you started your career?
I was thinking about this and I'm not sure I give an entirely consistent answer every time, but I think particularly latterly, the need to continually learn and the need to keep relevant and up to date is something that it definitely makes a difference as to whether I take somebody on into the company or not, because if they're not trying to keep themselves relevant...
Is that academic qualifications?
Academic qualifications. We sponsored 12 people to go through the MSc, for example. But it's also attending courses, it's attending events, it's having an open mind to things like nudge theory and just having a broad interest in AI, life in general, and what's going on in the world. Because I find the more that people want to have that sort of breadth of learning and understanding, the better they are as leaders as well, because then they take other people with them.
You're one of very few women CEOs in the UK finance industry. I read something where you said the mutual ethos of building societies, a position like your own, is attractive to female leaders. Why is that?
Well, this may be a little bit controversial because it is attractive to some men as well, but... I think there's a sort of genuinely diversity of male and females in terms of really wanting something purposeful rather than just commercial. And one of the things that I personally quite like is the fact that I think women are underestimated in terms of their focus of the reason why, you know, it's great to give customer experience, it's great to be great for members, is because that's how you build a long-term successful commercial organisation. And so people don't necessarily think the two things. They think women will be really good with the members, but won't necessarily be good commercially. And it's untrue.
And you still find that, do you?
Absolutely. I'm reading a book, actually, called The Authority Gap, which just reinstills, if you like, all the different examples about when this happens. And I, to my close colleagues, I do say I just love to be underestimated because it really allows me to demonstrate what we can do.
Yes, I think you're not the first woman to say that on this podcast. However, so looking back, what is the biggest challenge that you faced in your leadership career?
It wasn't the sexism side of things. And I think, you know, I'm quite generous when I say I've been in financial services 25 years because it makes me slightly younger. And so therefore, it's probably longer than that. So it's definitely not that. It's more, for me personally, it was the fact that I didn't do a degree. And I was being promoted really quite quickly. I was succeeding. And then they brought somebody else in who was more senior than me, who was younger than me, who was actually ex-McKinsey's. And I said,
"Is that the consultant, isn't it?"
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Strategy consultant. So very bright, really nice guy. Nothing against him, but it's just like, how did that happen?
And he wasn't as good as you.
No, I think he is. But I still asked the question.
He's still friends.
He hadn't proved anything at that particular point in his career, okay, other than the fact he could do some wonderful slides. And so what the answer to me was, well, we're not sure you're bright enough. And so I was like, well, you've seen my work for sort of 10 years. How can that question still be being asked? So they said, well, you know, you haven't got a degree. So I did do an MBA. I also decided that nobody was ever going to ask me that question again. So I also did a finance diploma and a marketing diploma whilst I was also running lending. And so people stopped asking me that question. So I think if I hadn't done that, I'm not sure I'd have had the confidence, and I'm not sure I would have filled the gap that was in people's perceptions as a result of not having one.
So, as you know, this is a podcast for that other great purveyor of MBAs, the Nottingham Business School.
Which obviously I would have chosen had I been more local.
Indeed. Where did you go, by the way?
I went to Cranfield.
Okay. What single piece of advice might you offer to the leaders and future leaders here?
I genuinely think that the millennials and the Gen Zs are much better at this than I was earlier in my career, which is build connections. You know, get to know people, be interested, go to events and understand and connect with people. Because I think, as I say, from my personal point of view, when you work for large organisations, you tend to network inside those. What I've learned to the latter part of my life, and my son, actually, who's 21, is much better at this than me, is actually really connecting with a broad range of people really can stand you in good stead. That would be the primary thing. And then the second thing I'd just say, again, based on my son's experience, is that it's so competitive now and people are so bright and so well educated that you have to have something that's different. And so my son's gay, he started an organisation called Pride Beats Prejudice for his university, and that differentiated him when he was then going for interviews. And so that's something that I wouldn't have had to do when I was growing up, but that's definitely the case, I think, for this generation and for people who want to do something. People want something extra.
Find that point of differentiation.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Sue Hayes, Chief Executive of the Nottingham Building Society. It's been absolutely fantastic to have you as a guest here on the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Mike.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, why not listen to previous episodes with the CEO of Capital One UK, Lucy Marie Hague's MBE, the CEO of the Chartered Management Institute, Anne Franca OBE, and the Chair of the Football Association, Debbie Hewitt MBE. This episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast was produced and edited by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.